Will the battles in Washington over money change in this new year? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Lawmakers won't return to Washington until next week. When they do get back, there's one thing that they won't have to deal with for the first time in a long time, the budget. That could give them the opportunity to deal with some other issues. And joining us now to talk about some of them is Marketplace's David Gura. Happy New Year, Mr. Gura.
Morning, David.
All right, so what would be on Congress's plate when they get back?
Well, a lot, to be frank. I mean, Democrats would like to extend long-term unemployment benefits. Those ran out a couple of days ago. And on top of that, there's the farm bill. Congress still hasn't passed a new one. And there are plenty of politicians who would like to wade into some other big issues like immigration reform and tax reform. The budget deal you mentioned did not deal with the debt ceiling. So that's something else, maybe the broccoli on Congress's plate that they're going to have to debate sooner rather than later. The Treasury Department says we're at risk of hitting that debt ceiling again as soon as next month.
Now, I heard you say tax reform. That's sort of like statehood for the District of Columbia. It creates a lot of news articles over time. But will it ever happen?
Well, I think there's agreement that the tax code, which is tens of thousands of pages long, is too confusing and dense and maybe not as fair as it could be. So I get the sense that lawmakers want to do something about it. But the question, especially with something as dense as tax policy, with something that affects as many people as tax policy, as many special interest groups as tax policy, is where there could be compromise. And here, I'm a little less optimistic. I mean, I think it's also worth noting that the senator who's been working on tax reform, who currently chairs the Senate Finance Committee, that's Democratic Senator Max Baucus, well, he's just been tapped to be the next U.S. ambassador to China. So timing is very important here, I think.
And I suppose the question is, does the budget deal that they did accomplish change the rules in any way in Washington?
You know, this was a very small deal. Congress did what Congress is supposed to do every year, and that's to pass a budget. So it was something. But, you know, this was a rare moment of bipartisanship. Democratic Senator Patty Murray stood up there alongside Republican Congressman Paul Ryan. And there's something to be said for there being some new breathing room here for lawmakers to deal with stuff that's not related to the budget. I mean, There was such an opportunity cost for the budget taking up so much time. But I don't think that that much has changed fundamentally. There are still these deep divides between the two parties and within the two parties. And the thing that could change that is the very thing that I think is going to distract them for many months now. And that's the midterm elections coming up in November.
From the Marketplace Washington Bureau, our David Gura. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Apple has now issued a statement saying it did not collaborate with America's National Security Agency to create a secret way for the government to spy on iPhones. Germany's Der Spiegel has an apparently leaked NSA document that suggests the government created spyware that could secretly switch on the mics and cameras in iPhones, turning them into bugs. Apple also said that it has been, quote, unaware of this alleged NSA program targeting our products. Who gave away money to whom in 2013? The Chronicle of Philanthropy has its new ranking. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and his spouse Priscilla Chan topped the list, giving nearly $1 billion worth of Facebook stock to the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Nike's Phil Knight and family were number two, with $500 million to the Oregon Health and Science University Foundation. Michael Bloomberg, who as of last night is no longer mayor of New York, gave $350 million to his old school, Johns Hopkins. The Chronicle's editor says $100 million gifts are on the rise, suggesting optimism about the economy. Want to see Marketplace live? Enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. The details and rules are at marketplace.org/trip. Ever run into a CAPTCHA, they're called, those blurry visual tests that you have to retype into websites to make sure you're a human and not, say, a computer program trying to steal info? Google, which owns the most popular CAPTCHA-type service, says it's made their test a little easier to decipher. But as Georgia Public Broadcasting's Adam Ragusa reports, that is not silencing critics who surf the web with their ears.
If you look at Google's CAPTCHA widget, there's an option for an audio test instead of a visual one. That's theoretically useful for people like Wayne Hawkins, a disability advocate in Sydney who's mostly blind.
We're talking on Skype. In Australia, you need to actually go through a CAPTCHA process to create a Skype account. And I listened to the CAPTCHA about 30 times and tried to type in what I thought I heard.
Four, three, one.
Never got through.
Four, five, four.
I got a 4, a 1, and possibly a bad word in there. Why do the characters have to sound so garbled?
They're trying to find this sweet spot where the human perceptual system can understand what's being said, but it's too difficult to write computer programs to understand it.
This is Jeffrey Bingham, a professor at Carnegie Mellon University, where CAPTCHA technology was born in the 90s. He says there are other audio CAPTCHAs that are easier to make out.
Also, probably the ones that were most easy for computer programs to solve. I think if there was an obvious better model, we'd be using it.
A Google spokesperson says the team that just made the visual CAPTCHAs a bit easier is working on the audio ones, too. Wayne Hawkins isn't waiting. His Kill CAPTCHA campaign got the attention of Google brass. They gave him a meeting where he argued,
"You know, we understand that there's a need for some security protocol, but it doesn't need to be inaccessible."
And accessible is the magic word. Lainey Feingold is a San Francisco attorney who's negotiated agreements with companies like Bank of America and CVS to get CAPTCHAs off their sites.
Any company that's putting out either sites or mobile apps without considering accessibility for people with disabilities is really at risk.
And she says the risk isn't just that you might lose customers, you might get sued. In Macon, Georgia,
I'm Adam Ruggia for Marketplace.
And before we go, for geographically appropriate countries, if they get their economy up to spec, they can join the European Union. They can also go the whole hog and adopt the European single currency. At midnight, Latvia officially adopted the euro. Although public support is on the rise, their polls show half the population opposed giving up the old money, the lot. Starter packs for the euro are available at Latvian post offices and banks. Little plastic bags of shiny euro coins that look like Hanukkah gelt, but without the chocolate inside. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.